Welcome to the Physiological Reviews podcast. I'm Kara Keehan. Today we'll discuss the review article by Drury et al. Titled Sex Differences in Blood Pressure Regulation and Hypertension, Renal, Hemodynamic, and Hormonal Mechanisms. This article was published October 16th, 2023. Joining us today are Deputy Editor Dr. Carol Ann Clement and lead author, Dr. Tu Lei. Let's learn more. Carol Ann?
Welcome to this podcast. My name is Carol Ann Remme. I'm a deputy editor of Physiological Reviews and based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And I'm joined today by Professor Tu Lei. She is a professor of medicine and chief of the Division of Nephrology at the University of Rochester. Her research is aimed at elucidating renal mechanisms of hypertension, as well as genetic determinants of susceptibility to kidney disease progression. So, Dr. Lei, welcome, and thank you for participating in this Physiological Reviews podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So, clearly, the topic of hypertension is of clinical importance, because we all know that hypertension is associated with major morbidity or mortality. It's a risk factor for many disorders, including myocardial infarction, but also stroke and kidney disease, just to name a few. And the differences between men and women, of course, sex differences in blood pressure, but also other cardiovascular disorders have become more into focus recently. So your review is extremely timely. Could you please maybe introduce a little bit to us the concept of the problem, in a sense that is this problem the sex difference in hypertension and blood pressure? Is this something that's happening throughout life, or are there certain differences across different age ranges?
You're asking a great question. We know that in young women, compared to age-matched young men, that the blood pressure in men are higher. However, as we get older, it appears in a lot of cross-sectional studies as well as longitudinal studies that women actually end up with a much steeper rise in their blood pressure in the older decades of life compared to men. And in some cases, women have higher blood pressure than men at similar age group as they get older. And so this becomes a factor that has been attributed to hormonal changes, particularly loss of estrogen, but perhaps also changes that occur because of changes in biology, including vascular anatomy, less vascular resistance in women's blood vessels. As they get older, there's a lot more vascular stiffness in women and perhaps maybe more vascular dysfunction. But we do not know whether or not this is independent or entirely dependent on hormonal changes.
Thank you. Very clear. So in addition to these hormonal changes, I think that the other thing that also was described very clearly in the review is that independent of the hormonal differences, there's also a difference between the sex chromosome effects. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yes. So the sex chromosome effect has been actually described in studies in animals when they have actually been able to generate animal models that can really separate the sex chromosome versus the hormonal chromosome effect on blood pressure. And in this model, it really demonstrates that in some cases, actually the sex chromosome effect on blood pressure is completely independent of the hormonal effect. And this is illustrated in the four core animal model where the sex chromosome, the Y chromosome can actually, there's a gene in the Y chromosome that is deleted that can actually generate an XY animal that actually end up with having ovaries. And so inducing the manipulation of gonadectomy and also the effect of the sex chromosome, the hormone effect and the sex chromosome effect have independent effect on blood pressure through this animal model. And in humans, historically, genome-wide association studies have really not involved or included sex chromosomes just because of lack of robust markers on these chromosomes. But certainly evidence has arisen that these chromosomes, the sex chromosomes, do have effect on biology through these GWAS studies. But the interpretation is also limited with respect to the effect of random X inactivation. And it's hard to know which X chromosome is actually inactivated, whether or not it's coming from the X chromosome is coming from the mother or coming from the father. And so it makes the interpretation very difficult to really get at the biology.
So if I understand correctly, there will be many genes that could be involved, but it's as up until now, it's difficult to discriminate or to identify which of these genes within the sex chromosomes could be contributing, let's say, to the sex differences in blood pressure regulation.
Yes, you are correct. And I think that the fact that we see the ACE2 gene as well as the angiotensin 2 type 2 receptor on the X chromosome really suggests that they are important and their effect is really sex dependent because of their location on the X chromosome.
Very clear, thank you. So, to come back a little bit to the hormones, which part or which actions of let's say the estrogen, for instance, do you think is most relevant in terms of determining the potential the differences in blood pressure regulation between sexes?
Well, so we do know from animal studies that estrogen really drives the expression of various sodium transporters along the nephron. And so in female animals, it appears that they have higher levels of expression of sodium transporters in the distal nephron, and this is estrogen dependent through ovarianectomy and through hormonal replacement experimental studies. Whereas in male animals, they have higher expression of sodium transporter in the proximal part of the tubule. How this is influencing blood pressure may also be determined by dietary changes, such as potassium. So we know that potassium impacts the expression and the activity of the sodium chloride transporter in the distal nephron. And so, does this mean that in women, at least in whose distal nephron has high expression of the sodium chloride transporter, whether or not they are, have more impact or effect by potassium in their diet on their blood pressure regulation, remains to be determined. But certainly, it's an area that it needs to be investigated.
Thank you. So there are many potential mechanisms, if I understand correctly, so that can contribute to this. And as you described in your review, there are sex differences in the renin angiotensin aldosterone system. There are differences between the renal sodium and potassium handling between the sexes, and also differences I read in endothelin one, for instance, which could also play an important role. But I also noticed that you discussed the differences in sympathetic nerve activity. And I'm curious to what extent you think that contributes to the blood pressure regulation differences between males and females.
Great question. I think at least in human studies, it's been shown that premenopausal women have higher baroreceptor reflex sensitivity and lower sympathetic outflow than postmenopausal women and age-matched men. And hormonal replacement therapy actually improves the baroreceptor reflex sensitivity in postmenopausal women. And we've seen studies that have shown that estrogen activates the estrogen receptor in key brain regions to improve the baroreceptor reflex sensitivity and suppress the sympathetic nerve activity. And I think that this is also reflecting in actually, as women get older, they actually become less sensitive to the beta blocker effect in reducing sympathetic nervous activity compared to men. So this is a reflection of changing in biology across a lifespan, which then raises the question whether or not our therapy should be tailored to the sexes as well as tailored to where they are in their lifespan because of their changing physiology.
I was also curious about the potential influence of differences in innate and adaptive immunity and the potential differences between sexes and how they can influence that. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So there's certainly sex differences in the immunity that may impact blood pressure regulation. It seems that in males, at least in animal studies, in males, there's more profound pro-hypertensive effects via the TH1, TH17 pathway. And whereas in female animals, it appears that the anti-inflammatory T regulatory pathway is higher, is more active in females. And so, could this be actually driving blood pressure itself or actually be driving the consequences of hypertension with the inflammatory system remains to really be delineated. It's not really known whether or not it's the blood pressure that's driving the inflammation, or the inflammation is actually what's causing the cardiovascular effects of hypertension. And certainly there are differences in males and females, at least in animal studies, but it's really hard to dissect this in human studies just because it's not possible to really access the tissues where the inflammation actually occurs.
Yes, and I understand it's also difficult then to discern causality versus consequence, let's say. So, and for that, of course, the animal studies are important where you can study that much more in detail.
Right. And I think that in moving forward, I think the study should be looking at time points of when hypertension occurs versus when vascular or tissue inflammation actually occurs. Is it that really the chicken or the egg? We just don't know what's driving what. And it's possible that they're actually feeding on each other. It's possible that hypertension then causes inflammation, and then inflammation causes tissue injury and then further drives hypertension. Or it's possible that it's the hypertension that's coming first that's driving the inflammation. But I think carefully timed studies in animal models would actually be able to give us additional information.
Yes, and those studies will also be very important to identify which targets could then be developed further for therapies, for instance, because then you
Yes.
need to know the timing and the developmental course, let's say. I wanted to also touch on the concept of salt sensitivity of blood pressure. So basically, as you described in the review, the change in blood pressure response to the change in salt intake, let's say, is different. In between males and females. And if I understand correctly, females could have more salt sensitivity, or is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. In humans, it's been demonstrated that women have more salt sensitivity to blood pressure than men, particularly in the HyperPath study. These are large studies, the InterSALT study, the GenSALT study, the DASH sodium trial. All of these studies show that salt sensitivity of blood pressure is higher in women than men. And we know that salt sensitivity of blood pressure is an independent cardiovascular risk that disproportionately affects women. We've seen that salt sensitivity is very important in terms of mortality rate, such that compared to salt-resistant normotensive subjects, normotensive salt-sensitive subjects with salt sensitivity actually have higher increase in mortality rate, similar to that of hypertensive salt-resistant subjects. And so the fact that there are more women, especially postmenopausal women, who are salt sensitive, makes me think that there is some component of the salt sensitivity of blood pressure that may be also independent of blood pressure, of hypertension itself, that may actually be driving the mortality rate that we're seeing in women with higher blood pressure.
Very interesting. Is it known what underlies those differences?
So that's a great question, and it's been a debate for several decades now. I think the original conceptual framework that was proposed by Guyton and colleagues gave us the understanding that there has to be an impaired excretion of sodium by the kidney in response to increase in sodium intake that then leads to higher blood pressure due to increased cardiac output and increase in volume expansion. But I think in the past decade or even slightly longer, there is a challenge to that conceptual framework by the vasodysfunction framework, which then proposes that there has to be an alteration in vascular resistance that then drives the sodium sensitivity to blood pressure. And I think that there is evidence that support this vasodysfunction framework in both human as well as animal studies. There have been two studies that looked at salt-sensitive human subjects, and they both show that while cardiac output and cardiac index may, and as well as volume, may actually be the same in salt-sensitive and salt-resistant subjects, it's really the systemic vascular resistance that is different, that the salt-sensitive subjects have higher systemic vascular resistance compared to the salt-resistant subjects. So this suggests that there has to be a change or an adaptive mechanism to vasorelax to accommodate the increase in cardiac output and increase in volume to maintain normal blood pressure. But when that vasorelaxation is impaired and systemic vascular resistance is increased in salt-sensitive subject, that is what is driving the change in their blood pressure that we see.
So clearly, we should not only think simply about, let's say, blood pressure and values of blood pressure of the traditional way we measure the blood pressure. I was also struck by the first part of the review where you also highlight the fact that not only is it that there is a sex difference in blood pressure regulation, but for instance, women have with the same blood pressure, with a low blood pressure, according to our definition, can still have a higher risk of cardiovascular mortality, for instance. So, meaning that there are actually not only sex differences in the blood pressure regulation, but also sex differences in the consequences of, let's say, the hypertension. Is it known why women are so much more prone to, let's say, blood pressure dependent mortality and morbidity?
It is not known. I think that clearly what we're seeing is of concern with respect to whether or not the blood pressure threshold for treatment should be the same in men and women. We do know that from a Canadian observational study that show that women discharged from hospital who have a diagnosis of congestive heart failure, let's say, when they're treated with an angiotensin receptor blocker, they have a better survival than those treated with an angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitor. But there was no difference in survival in men when the two therapies were compared. And so this could be explained by observation that females have higher expression of the angiotensin type 2 receptor, and that the preservation of this signaling pathway may actually be beneficial in the treatment of heart failure in women. And as I mentioned earlier, beta blockers are less effective in reducing sympathetic nerve system, nerve activity and peripheral vascular resistance in postmenopausal women compared to men. But so that's really trying to get at the biology of it, but there's so much that we really don't understand about what puts women at higher risk of cardiovascular disease at lower blood pressure threshold than men. And as you mentioned, the REGARD study, the which is the reasons for geographic racial disparities in stroke studies show that the association between hypertension severity and incident ischemic stroke is really nearly twice as large in women compared to men. But again, these studies do not really give us an answer as to whether or not lowering the threshold to treat hypertension should be equivalent in men versus women. And I think that we can probably get a glimpse of that in the SPRINT trial, which was a large trial conducted in 9,300 something patients, where there was in that study, the patients were randomized to intensive blood pressure control, the goal of which is the systolic blood pressure of less than 120 millimeter of mercury versus standard blood pressure control, which is less than 140 millimeter of mercury. And so in this study, there was a secondary analysis that showed that there was a statistically significant benefit in lowering the composite outcome in cardiovascular disease in men, but there was only a trend in women. And so then this goes back to the question, if we lower the blood pressure threshold to treat women, would that actually translate into more cardiovascular benefit? But this is a secondary analysis in SPRINT. SPRINT was really not designed to test the sex differences in treatment outcome. And also in this particular secondary analysis, they illustrated that, they pointed out that the study only had about 35% women, even though the target of enrollment was 50%. And also the women that were enrolled were older than men and also had higher systolic blood pressure at baseline than men. The lack of statistical significance that was observed in women in terms of the treatment outcome, could be attributable to just not enough power to detect a difference, as well as the characteristics of the men and the women in terms of their baseline blood pressure as well as their age is different. So it's really hard to know whether or not the blood pressure should be blood pressure threshold should be lower in women than men for treatment. So I think that a moving forward, I think a large randomized study that is powered to look at the sex differences in blood pressure lowering threshold to decrease the risk of cardiovascular event between men and women is really needed.
I think it's a very important issue. And as you alluded to, I think many clinical trials in the past did not include women or hardly or much less women. And as you explained, that can also have consequences for the results of these trials. So hopefully that will be addressed in future trials so that this will become even more clear. I was also wondering whether you think in general, whether the hypertension awareness, let's say, among women needs more attention. Do you think that that is something that can be improved on?
Yes, I have to say that women actually seek medical attention and go to the doctors more than men do. I think many studies have shown that. Women go to see their primary care provider, and women are more interested in prevention therapy than men are. But in terms of the awareness, or I think that women are aware of hypertension. I think where we need work on is the level of hypertension therapy or the effectiveness of hypertension therapy for women is actually an area for improvement because I think there are fewer women that achieve target blood pressure control than men. Studies have shown that. And perhaps that is also a driving factor in the increase in cardiovascular mortality that we're seeing. Alternatively, we could look at, there's another argument that has been proposed is that men with higher blood pressure may die of cardiovascular disease more quickly. And so when we're looking at the older groups, it's the men that survive that have lower blood pressure than women who have higher blood pressure with cardiovascular disease. So there is that element as well too that I think we need to take into consideration. And then also I think the symptoms of cardiovascular disease, such as a heart attack, are very different between men and women. And I think that we've looked at the classical symptoms of chest pressure or squeezing or radiating to the back. That's more common in men. And it used to be thought that is actually something that's universal between the sexes. But we know now that women have more atypical symptoms of heart attack, you know, maybe more arm pain or more neck pain or feeling fatigue or nausea. That's not really the classical symptoms of heart failure. So the women then are less referred, or maybe they don't think that this is a serious, these are serious symptoms of heart attack. And so I think we need to raise awareness that heart attack symptoms are very different between men and women. And so women should be referred more quickly, despite the differences in their heart attack symptoms.
What do you think are the avenues or the areas of research that are really lagging behind and which hopefully will give more insight into this topic and also maybe identify novel targets for therapy in the future?
You know, we discuss about the key questions that are highly clinically relevant, that I think remain unanswered. And that is, should blood pressure threshold be lower in women than men? Should antihypertensive therapy be different in women compared to men? And also, should they be dependent on where they are in their lifespan, whether they're younger or older? And I think that the challenge for us in looking at sex differences in hypertension as well as cardiovascular disease, and getting at the mechanism and the physiology is due to lack of animal models that really recapitulate the changes that we see in women as they get older. Most of the animal studies are looking at really midlife adult animals. You know, in rodents, we study them. I think rats have a lifespan of 2.5 to 3.5 years, but we study them around 10 to 16 weeks of age. And mice, they have a lifespan of 2 years, and we study them again around 3 months of age. And so these animal models really do not recapitulate the aging or the postmenopausal changes that we see in women. In these animal models that we look at, primarily what we're seeing is that the males have worse blood pressure and worse organ injury. But again, these are younger animals. And so we do need better animal models that better reflect the changes across the lifespan in men and women. But then that comes at a cost as well too, because you can imagine keeping animals for a very long period of time comes at additional cage costs and staffing costs, et cetera. And so I think that more funding needs to be dedicated to support these aging studies in animal models to better understand the physiology.
I'm very interested in the sex chromosome effects, actually. I'm just curious if there's any more information that can be gathered on which, genes could be playing a role within the sex chromosome. Is there something you would like to say about that?
As you know, GWAS studies have historically neglected the sex chromosomes. And I think, as you know, I think part of it is because of the maybe not as robust markers or SNPs that are on the sex chromosomes, as well as the fact that there are random X inactivation of the sex chromosome, and so you don't know whether or not the effect is that is observed is really due to that versus actual non-sex dependent effects. And I do think that the animal studies, you know, with the four core animal groups where they can really distinguish between hormonal versus the sex chromosome, actually gives us a glimpse that there are still hormone independent effects that is really driven by the sex chromosome itself on blood pressure. I think that's what I have gotten from these studies. But I, in terms of getting at the mechanism, I think we're still really, you know, at the very beginning part of understanding the sex chromosome effects.
Indeed, there is still a lot of work to be done, but I think that your review has helped enormously in understanding and providing us the insight into the current knowledge in this very important area of research. And I would like to thank you again for joining us today and having this discussion together on this highly relevant research area. And I would like to invite all the listeners to read your very insightful review.
Thank you so much. I really truly appreciate this opportunity to speak to the listeners, and I really do hope that in the future we'll have better animal models to really go after and dissect the sex differences so that we can come up with therapeutic targets to take care of both men and women.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Physiological Reviews podcast. For more episodes like this one, visit journals.physiology.org/journal/physrev or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify.